This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. I thank you, our audience, for listening each and every time we post one of these podcasts. As I say, every time I get on the mic, it's an honor to get on the mic and give you guys some wisdom, whether it be for myself or some of the guests that we've had on. And it's been a lot of fun for me from a purely selfish perspective, getting to talk to some really cool people in the industry. And today is no exception. Today, I am speaking with somebody that is a contemporary of mine, does what I get a chance to do, just does it geographically very different place in the world than we do. We are joined today by Thomas Greenman, I believe is how you say your last name. Is that correct, Thomas?
That's correct.
Okay. And Thomas works for a point-of-sale reseller up in Alaska. Is that also correct?
That is.
Awesome. Awesome. Why don't you tell our audience members a little bit about who Thomas is, where you came from, and quite frankly, even how we met, because it may be, I know that we've got a lot of RSPM members that are listeners, and I also know that you listen to the podcast from time to time when you don't have anything else better to do.
I do. And thanks for having me on the show. I'm a fan. And this is a great opportunity. So my name's Thomas Greenman. I am the vice president, also co-owner, but my primary hat is sales manager at Skrillex Point of Sale Solutions. So we've been in business since 1976, based out of Anchorage, Alaska. Some of the people in our organization are really heavily involved in RSPA, and that's how you and I, Jeremy, kind of met, is through the RSPA organization. But we've been in business for about 45 plus years, give or take. I got to Alaska via Florida, the Alabama area, and that was probably about 15 years ago. I got started with Skrillex, and I've worn probably every hat that there is at the company. That's pretty much it in a nutshell. I mean, my passion really is technology. So I love being on this type of show. And I think that's one of the strengths that I bring to our organization, is that real love of kind of pushing the envelope and seeing what's new. I really embrace change. I love change, as a matter of fact.
you're in the 10% of the world's population, or maybe even smaller as an early adopter. I too am in that same boat, and everybody will tease me around the office. It's like, oh, you know, ask Jeremy before you try anything, because he's probably tried it already and can give you the pluses and minuses to those, which is why it's such a privilege to sit and listen to some of these innovators that we get on the show, because they're always inventing new things that I never even thought were a thing until they come out with a solution for it. And then I'm like, oh, that's really cool. We should figure this out. So, yeah. So for those that aren't familiar with what the RSPA is, and or what a point of sale reseller is, why don't you give them a little bit of a salvo? I know that 20% of our audience, as I've done the polls, knows exactly what we do and probably knows you and I both. And then there's a whole bunch of restaurateurs that are like, what? You do what? Who's the RSPA? What is the RSPA? Tell me a little bit more about that before we dig into kind of our topics for the day.
Yeah. So most people, you hear the word reseller, pretty common acronym is VAR, value added reseller. But essentially, we're point of sale dealers. In the beginning, a lot of us were fancy cash, we were cash register dealers, that type of thing. Yeah, we kind of morphed into the fancy cash register dealers. And realistically, you know, probably in the past 25 years, it's really morphed into more of a not just selling equipment, but service advisor, technology advisor, really a trusted advisor, pretty much with all things kind of running that aspect of the business. And really, it kind of changes every day. So if anything, I feel like we're kind of like the frontline people of who are really taking that change to restaurateurs and retail operations. But RSPA is Retail Service Providers of America. I believe that's correct. It's been around, I think, probably at least as long as we have. But
75 years next year, actually. Yeah. 75 years next year, is we're coming up on the 75th anniversary of what used to be the Independent Cash Register Dealers Association that turned into the Retail Solution Providers Association, is actually what that acronym is. But I'll let you finish. But it's 75 years. The RSPA, or its roots, have been around, which is kind of crazy to me, coming up in 2023.
It is. Personally, I find this, the RSPA, one of the most useful things and really business saving aspects for companies like us. They've given us education, networking, and just really solid advice and really kind of trends and technologies that have really shaped and transformed our business and via that method, you know, our customers, you know, restaurateurs. Without the RSPA, I think Skrillex would have been dead and gone a long time ago. So I'm thankful for RSPA all the time. As a matter of fact, my wife, who works with us now, she's our office manager. She used to do in-home healthcare. So she was their bookkeeper. And I was telling her all the time, I was like, you need an organization like RSPA for you because of all the change and all the things, the complexities of what's going on in the healthcare industry. You need somebody like this in your corner. And well, anyway, now she works for me. So
yeah. So now she gets to listen. So for those audience members out there, I get the privilege of sitting on the board of directors for the RSPA. So I get a chance to talk to people like Thomas and others that are in the industry that are really driving things forward. And so really more than anything, what he and I had talked about, because we were just recently at a show, we were kind of talking about, you know, he was saying how much he enjoyed the show. And I said, well, why don't you come on and kind of talk to me a little bit about what the world looks like from restaurant operators' perspective. You probably talk to as many operators as I do on any given day and any given week. And we've all lived through in the restaurant industry and the restaurant technology industry a pretty ugly last couple of years. And from ugly perspective, I mean, you know, there's been some beauty coming out of it. There's been some really cool stuff that has happened. At the same time, there's been a lot of ugliness. And Thomas and I just got to talking, like I said, at this last trade show about all of the different things that we've seen restaurants adopt, some well, some not as well, and kind of where everybody is normalizing and leveling out. And so, you know, 2 years ago, if you go back in the show archives, you'll hear us talking about the same kind of things that he's going to bring up now, which were those items that that these restaurateurs adopted, whether that be third-party delivery, whether that be you know, online ordering, whether that be pay at the table, whether that be contactless payment, all of these different things that restaurant operators have adopted, and what stuck, what didn't stick, who did it well, who didn't do it well. And so why don't we dig in, Thomas, to kind of, I guess, what are the top one or two things that you saw your customers looking at from a perspective of, we really need this now with the pandemic upon us, that probably your organization was sitting in front of them days, weeks, and months before saying, you really need to get on this because we're technologists at heart and we know how much it's going to help a business, but they didn't necessarily see the value in it. And then we can talk through kind of what that looks like going forward.
Yeah, I'd say probably the biggest thing, and you know, I think about it now and I'm like, I still can't believe people weren't on it, but online ordering, I mean, it sounds so simple, you know, that I actually had to sell people on this idea. And I was trying to sell people on it before the pandemic. It kind of sold itself during the pandemic, but believe it or not, there were plenty of people who still didn't want to do it, which still confounds me to this day. But, you know, in a good example, the pizza field, I mean, pizza in general has had online ordering for a long time. You know, it's easy. It's pretty quick, easy to use. Most customers prefer it. You know, honestly, I'd prefer not to talk to somebody on the phone to order food, because I think probably most people, like in my generation and younger, cause I'm older than what I look like. We're not of that mindset. We love technology. We want to get into an app and customize it and do the things that we want to do. And doing that on a phone, it seems kind of funny, but like the show Parks and Recs, where Ron Swanson walks into Lowe's and somebody's like, "Hey, how can I help you?" And he says, "Yeah, I know more than you."
Well, pretty much. It's kind of the way the world works nowadays, right?
Yeah. I kind of feel that way when it comes to, you know, products and services that I'm a fan of. You know, like if I'm ordering pizza and I'm like, I know all about this. I can do this type of like this type of crust and this type of cheese and, you know, I'm just kind of ravenous that way. I mean, I'm big into that. I don't want to talk to somebody and then have them maybe not understand what it is I want, or maybe I have to wait for a long time. I mean, online ordering just essentially kind of sells itself. You know, it's somebody who doesn't tire. They're always giving out the right information, hopefully. And it's a great thing. And our customers, you know, that did adopt it and they were previously naysayers or just didn't want to do it, it really saved their business. I mean, I saw businesses that were, you know, struggling and they were, you know, hey, Thomas, I'm going to have to close the doors unless this really works out for us. And then you started seeing, you know, people getting used to it, their customers getting accustomed to, you know, interfacing with their favorite restaurant that way. And then the sales kind of peaking up and them actually surviving and in some cases really thriving. And so it was a beautiful thing to see. But, you know, the hindsight of it being like, you could have had this in place like 3 years ago or longer. You know, you wouldn't have had this, I've got to rush to it. I've got to try and make something happen right away. You know, you would have been ready for it. You know, we talk about disaster planning a lot with our customers and internally, you know, at this point, we've all been living on our disaster plans for the past 2 years.
Absolutely. Well, and it's always interesting to me because you and I have been in this space for quite some time. Obviously, we know the value. You know the value both as a reseller as well as just in general in life and how much you interact with it. But it's still always remarkable to me how few customers, even to this day, still have it. Because I think that, I mean, I think there's a couple of different reasons why, and we can talk about those. But I think even as you guys have been rolling out these things through the pandemic, there's also the flip side of it is it creates its own set of unique challenges. What kind of challenges were you guys seeing at Skrla when people did implement it? Because it doesn't, the orders don't come through the same way that they might from a traditional channel. They're coming in online. There is no throttling. There is no wisdom of who's coming in the door. When you've got, you know, a 200-seat dining room, it's a little bit easier to know who's here, who's not here, what the waits are going to be like, and you kind of have a built-in methodology of, you know, crowd control, for lack of a better term, and the management of those resources. Whereas the minute you open up that four-wall economics, as I've called it for quite some time, as soon as you open up the doors to outside orders from online ordering, you don't know where your customers are coming from. And for our customers, one of the biggest things was even the mix of when people ordered changed significantly. They would order, once you launched online ordering, they'd order on a Tuesday night. They wouldn't go to the restaurant on a Tuesday night pre-pandemic. They would go on a Friday or Saturday night because they were done with sports. They were done with school for the year. I mean, for the week. Whereas during the pandemic, even the days of the week changed for a lot of the restaurants that we did business with, because you could order online on a Tuesday and then make your own food at home on a Thursday or Friday or Saturday, whereas you traditionally would have gone out. What kind of things did you see from your customer base as you guys tried to help them solve some of those unique challenges? Because it's not just the technology for technology's sake; it's the flip side of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love the fact that you're talking about, you know, like, hey, we have business that we never got before, which is, you know, is pretty exciting to most restaurateurs. I would think, like, hey, you know, we never do this amount of business on a Tuesday night. You know, that's like a Friday or Saturday type thing. But we're getting these types of orders coming in at, you know, irregular times. It's pretty exciting. But I like to think about, you know, fear of the unknown is something that kind of brings out something in all of us. You know, that fear of the unknown is pretty much like responsible for a lot of the knee-jerk reactions we have whenever we're like, no, I don't want to do that, you know, because you just don't know. So kind of jumping into it and you're like, okay, this is what's going to happen. You know, you're going to get these orders and, you know, everything that kind of happens kind of just exactly how you said it. You know, being able to pull labor reports and saying, okay, well, we've been doing this for 3 weeks. It's been crazy, but we're starting to see an uptick in a pattern emerge, you know, in our sales reports. Okay, well, on Tuesday nights, that's going on. Well, why is that? You know, I talked to a customer, maybe that's a football game that's going on, or, you know, something like that. Or, you know, if you're in the wing space or pizza, you know, sometimes sports has an effect like that. But being able to use your sales data and your point of sale to kind of essentially find that pattern, so that way you can forecast what your labor is going to be for those particular days. Okay, I need to have X amount of people here on Tuesdays because for whatever reason, Tuesday's the new Friday, you know, that type of thing. There, and you know, some of the other challenges we saw was, you know, printing. You know, they weren't quite used to the printing that would come in the kitchen, you know, where typically, you know, they've got, you know, maybe a hot side and cold side printer or whatnot. But now they need to have, you know, somebody to box up the orders, and maybe they need a new printer. Maybe they need a new position, or maybe they've got to swap people around. So yeah, there was huge challenges. I think the labor problem that has kind of come out of the pandemic has only exacerbated more of those issues, where it's like, now it's like you probably are in a really good rhythm. You've kind of understood, like, you know, here's what my sales cycle is. Here are the places that I was deficient in. And now I've had enough space to really kind of see what the pattern is. You know, I'm filling in, you know, an extra printer here, or I've taken a position away from here and I'm putting that person back here. It's been huge. And I think every restaurant has its own unique challenges, like a quick serve restaurant versus like a steakhouse. We've seen steakhouses who, well, I'll give you a good example. I wouldn't name any names, but it's a really popular steakhouse in town who family run since, geez, I think like the 50s or something like that. And they've done the same thing since the 50s. And they were not willing to do online ordering. They weren't willing to do curbside. But whenever they started running the numbers and seeing, you know, hey, we're not going to be open, they had to do something. So it was a challenge for them to, you know, pivot and shift, and like, how is the best way to get a steak out the door, you know, now, because this is what people want. We've never put a steak in a box, you know, does it taste good? So, I mean, there's so many things that have encompassed that. And again, that fear of the unknown in the beginning, you know, you've never been down this path, and maybe there's not a lot of people that have been down that path. So you're kind of that pioneer. And once you get there, it's like, okay, you know, but, it's scary. It's been scary. Change is scary.
Well, and the thing, I mean, there was a couple things that you and I talked about pre-show, but one of the other things that I want to make sure that our listeners are hearing you say is not just an online ordering solution, but an online ordering solution that ties into all of the other technology that you have.
Yes.
That ties into the point of sale, because we've seen in our space people that, oh, I'll, you know, I've got an uncle that writes websites and he'll give me an online ordering thing and it sends a text, or it might even come straight to a printer. It might even come straight to a printer, or it might, you know, might do something within the store, but it's not integrated into the point of sale. So you're managing two different applications. You're managing two different sets of prices. You're managing out of stocks in both systems. You're managing all of those things. Talk to me about the value of having it integrated with your tech stack, because I think the other thing that creates fear, uncertainty, and doubt as you talk about it is the fact that it's not integrated. And now I've got to manage all of these different things, and I'm not a tech person. I don't know how to do any of this stuff. You know, talk to me about what that looks like from your customer perspective.
I'll give you a great story of that. So most of our customers, if it's anything related to technology, even if it's something small or large, usually they would come to us and be like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. I want to do this or whatever. So we really take on that trusted advisor role, walk through that process and, you know, see what they need, or, you know, maybe we've been down that path before with another customer and we can utilize that expertise to essentially guide them in the right way to do it. Like we had these pitfalls, this is what you want to watch out for. But we had a bunch of customers who, for whatever reason, they did not advise us on certain things like integrating Grubhub or DoorDash or whatever. And you kind of find out after the fact, you know, they're talking to you. It's kind of like restaurant therapy. You know, you're talking to a customer and they're telling you about all your woes, and you're like, geez, I wish you would have, you know, just run that past me, you know, before you went down this. But like a Grubhub, for example, you know, more often than not, they come in and they're like, yeah, it's pretty easy. We'll give you an iPad and you just watch out for the iPad and you put those orders in your point of sale system. It's great. Well, the reality of it is it's not so great. Maybe they can't hear the iPad ding over all the noise in the bar. And then, you know, the end scenario is like somebody's calling the manager saying, you know, why didn't I get my food and why didn't this happen? And they're like, well, what do you mean? They're like, we didn't get an order. And they're like, yeah, we did it through Grubhub. And so they go check and there's like all these orders and nobody was paying attention to it or they didn't hear it. So yeah, not having it integrated into your point of sale system or your technology stack, there's a lot of problems there. So not only just that aspect of it, but you know, there's all these different things that kind of pop into like, okay, well, somebody from Grubhub picked it up and then like 2 hours later they dropped it off. Now, mm-hmm. The customer doesn't care that it was Grubhub. Yep. It was you.
It's ultimately your brand. And we've talked about, we've talked about this quite a bit on the show, is really that whole idea of your image, your brand, and what you're delivering to the guests. And again, it's so much easier when you're inside of the four walls. But as you talked about, you know, the pandemic forced the issue of getting people to have to adopt these technologies that historically have been something, I don't need to. This big steakhouse that you're talking about probably is plenty busy enough, probably doesn't need the business during non-pandemic times. But then As soon as the pandemic hit, they realized, oh, I don't have this and I don't have that. I don't have a loyalty. I have no way to even talk to the guests. How many times have we talked to our customers about loyalty? So you know who your guests are and you are able to talk with them in a non-busy time or just in a time at all to be able to say thank you for your business or whatnot. We've talked about it for years with our client base and they didn't want to listen because they were doing just fine. They didn't necessarily need us. As soon as the spigot turned off and they didn't have that, they were like, oh, I wish I would have done that 5 years ago. Did you find some of that same thing with some of your clients?
I did. Believe it or not, though, not that many. I kind of had that fear of like, you know, once things go back to normal, what's going to happen? And for us in Anchorage, you know, we had a bunch of lockdowns. At one point, it was just no indoor dining whatsoever, which was kind of like the dark days, if you will. Like that was really ugly for everybody. It got super political and yeah. But eventually, we got to the point where like, okay, we'll do outside seating. We'll allow that. And so that was nice. So, okay, now all of a sudden I have a need for a mobile solution. I need to go out there and take the point of sale to the customer. Hey, no problem. We've talked about that. We've got a plan for it. Some people are using it, but a lot of people aren't. So no problem. We've got your back. Uh-huh. And then they're like, wow, this is really cool. Sometimes the conversations with restaurateurs, you don't really want to change their view on how they do business because they don't want to hear it typically. And I don't want this to sound like you're fussing at restaurateur session.
But no, it's a hard business.
It's rough.
Yeah.
I gave some advice to a couple of restaurateurs and they didn't take it. But one of the things that I was telling them, I was like, have you ever heard of the brigade system in restaurants where you have people that specifically do specific things? I was like, what if you did this? So labor shortages, have, you know, one or two people, that's their job, is just to go around and take care of orders. They do their orders, they get drinks, that type of stuff. And then you have a food runner or a drink runner, and that's all they do. So instead of having the waiter or waitress have to keep going back and forth and, you know, they're juggling multiple balls, wear different hats, you know, you just do this. And so with that mobile device, you know, they're running around hitting tables left and right, keeping track of those orders. Some of those people decided, hey, that's actually a pretty good idea. We'll try that. And so mm-hmm. they were doing more with less via technology, you know, instead of having to write something down, because there's so many people that are still doing this, writing a ticket down. Maybe they miss a few things. They find a point of sale and they type it all back in and maybe they miss something else. And so garbage in, garbage out with any electronic system, you know, the kitchen messes something up, you know.
Well, besides the fact that you've now lost all of the time going back and forth from the table, how many times have you been stopped? How many things have you missed? You know, what did you forget about? Something you said to me that was really quite surprising to me was that you're finding from some of your clients that once things have gotten back to a new normal, and I say a new normal, you know, something that's a little bit more, I guess, in line with what we're used to, maybe a little bit less, but just in general, what's that?
Stabilized.
Yeah. Stabilized that some people in your customer base are turning off or going away from the technology that I guess helped them get through the pandemic. Is that true? I guess. And if so, What does that look like, and why what reasons are they giving you for that?
Well, I think it's some kind of optimism factor. I think, you know, that, hey, I think that the pandemic is over and we can go back to the way that the tried and true type of thing. I heard a saying the other day, I think it was the most dangerous words in business are, that's the way we've always done it.
Yep. Isn't that the truth?
So they kind of fell back on what they knew, you know, it was that kind of like, here is my training. My training is this is how we do business. And, you know, we do business really well this way. And that's kind of what they defaulted back to. It was like, okay, like I've got a rental car. The pandemic is, you know, my car is broken. I need to drive a different car. And as soon as the pandemic's over and I can drive my regular car, I don't need to use that one. Well, okay, cruise control, and it had Bluetooth and all this other stuff. And meanwhile, I'm back in a gear shift, stick shift vehicle, and it's got no radio, no air conditioner. And this is just what I'm used to. And so that, to me, that's the dangerous part of, you know, downshifting, taking away these technologies.
You're going to lose a population of your guests if that's the only way that they engaged with you. That was the only way that they do business with you, right?
Right, yeah. Like, I'll give you like the Netflix type of scenario. So like we've all been used to going to the movie theaters and getting popcorn and waiting in line and doing that whole thing and watching a movie and coming back. Well, online ticket sales, pretty amazing. I don't have to like spend 2 hours trying to get a ticket and then wait and, you know, get a rush to sit down in the theater. I can get it ahead of time. So if I want a particular seat, I can get the seat I want. And if that's not available during that time, I find a different time. And so I don't have to do that rush and, you know, that type of thing. And so Netflix comes along and the pandemic comes along and these movies are streaming at your house. I've got amazing TV. Sometimes it looks better than the movie theater. I can just watch the movies I want. You know, I don't have to go to the theater. I can make my own popcorn. I'm used to that, but like you've already kind of let the genie out of the box, you know, Pandora's box kind of deal. Like, I don't really like going back to the theater unless it's an IMAX theater. But yeah, my TV is amazing. And some of the theaters, like the bulbs are turned down kind of dim. So like I want what I want as a consumer. That's just who I am. And I will go to what it is I want. And if I can't get it from them, I'll go someplace and get it somewhere else. And so I think restaurateurs have to be very mindful of their customers and what they want, because same thing, you know, if I can't get it from you in the way that I want it, you know, that's kind of part of the experience.
Yeah. You might lose out on that opportunity to sell to that customer.
Yeah. Yeah. I might not, you know, there's like going to a sushi place or whatever, like the experience is kind of being there and doing that type of stuff. But honestly, having sushi dropped off at your house is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's like, yep. Wow. And you know, me, I'm very particular about my soy sauce. I'm like, I don't have to worry about Bobo soy sauce. I've got the good stuff here.
Got ya. That's funny. You'll have to educate me on the levels of soy sauce. I haven't quite gotten to that, that connoisseur on the soy sauce. Well, and it's such an interesting thought that you had that, I quite frankly hadn't even considered, because, once people adopt these types of technologies, if they're working, you know, that would be the one caveat that I would say for restaurateurs is if they're working and guests are engaging with them, you've got to consider and figure out a way to deal with it. And we've got some clients now that quite frankly are busy enough, and I don't know population density and volume well enough in Anchorage to be able to say that it would work completely there. But I think for our listeners out there, we've got certain brands that are opening up other ghost kitchens with, you know, within a mile or two of their existing branch to service and fulfill that guest order, whether it be for takeout or for delivery or for, you know, third-party delivery. They're opening up a secondary kitchen that all it's doing is preparing food. There's no front of the house. There's no place to sit, so that the existing restaurant, because one of the arguments that I've gotten from people is wait, you know, as soon as the pandemic slowed down, everything, everybody wanted to come in and our doors were full and we couldn't even service the guests that we had. How do I maintain that? And my thought, and I know that restaurateurs are very resilient, they have been through this pandemic and they continue to be, is where do you figure out how to create that guest experience, but potentially not even in the four walls of what you have there, figure out a secondary kitchen, whether it's right behind it, you know, you build a, you know, a she shack in the back that's all just a kitchen, or you figure out a place that's a mile down the road to be able to service these guests. But I would say strongly consider that. And we've got people that are doing, you know, one of our clients is doing upwards of $5 million in takeout a year. In addition to their regular dining room menu. Have you guys had any luck with any of your clients doing anything unique and different like that, Thomas?
We haven't seen any of our customers really take on the ghost kitchen aspect of it. But interestingly enough, we've actually had the reverse. We've had a ghost kitchen customer of ours go get a brick and mortar place because the demand was so great for them.
That's
so
awesome.
It was kind of weird. It was just like you've got a ghost kitchen. It's like, yeah, absolutely. We can help you out with that. And they're like, okay, well, we're going to expand into a brick and mortar and we're going to do that. Can you help us out with that? I'm like, sure. It's kind of essentially the same system, except, you know, we need to get you some different hardware and, you know, talk through like how you're going to do this. But yeah, it was interesting. We've seen a few really kind of savvy entrepreneurs really kind of take advantage of newer technologies or these really out of the box thinking type of aspects of like, you know, we're going to do, like family pack meals or other things that were like, this is just not what we do, but we need to stay alive. So we're going to do family style dinners, or, you know, a few nights a week, we're just going to do this. So, some of our restaurateurs have been pretty savvy about that type of thing. And it's been kind of beautiful to watch, but on the flip side, you know, those family pack dinners, I don't know how popular they were, but I imagine there were some people that were into those, but they don't do them anymore.
Yeah.
And maybe that's one of those, like, maybe it wasn't popular, but if it was popular, did you stop doing it because that's just not who we are anymore? You know, that type of deal. So it always kind of concerns me. It's like you give somebody something amazing, you know, and then you take it away. It's like,
yeah, well, and the guests start to come to expect it. And you can't always do everything for everyone. I mean, that's something that I've been talking about on the podcast for a long time. At the same time, if the project, the product, the experience is resonating with guests, figure it out. Because that family pack might have been hard to pack and it might have been a lower profit percentage and a higher food cost percentage. But at the end of the day, if it's incremental sales that you can drive through the business and keep them coming back, why not?
Yeah.
Why not consider it? And why not you know, create that opportunity for them to engage with your brand even more frequently?
Yeah. You know, the ghost kitchen concept, you know, okay, well, we'll just spin it off. We'll, you know, I hate to say it, but you know, the pandemic is, there's a lot of restaurants that have closed. There's kitchen equipment. A lot of
real estate.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there that's just kind of being unused. Why not spin off some of your staff? You know, I use the entertainment.
If they have them.
Spin off. Yeah.
If they have staff. But yes, there's that.
Yeah, and get them out there. And, you know, in the beginning, everybody was concerned about being safe. And it's like, okay, well, we can't interact with the customers or, you know, we're concerned about this type of stuff. A ghost kitchen's pretty awesome, you know. Yep. Nobody comes in to see you. You know, it can be super chill vibes. You can have music going. You don't have that front of house to deal with. So yeah, I mean, it's the pandemic for me has kind of been like a really exciting time. You know, it's like all these things that as a VAR, you know, we've wanted to our customers to do, they're finally doing. It's like, wow, you know, I feel really like at the end of the day, like, you know, I had so many restaurateurs come to us and say, you know, thank you so much for what you've done. You've saved our business. And, you know, we took it versus really humbly. It's like, you know, like I'm out here saving the day, you know, as opposed to just like doing whatever we typically do. But, you know, like we're the heroes. And it's like, but I mean, they're on the front line, you know? And so for us, I mean, our customer success is how we make money. And It was rough for us too, but like there were so many days that we just felt like this today meant something.
I love that reminder. Well, and it's funny you talk about it. And again, I've talked about this on the show quite a bit. Is the amount of technological adoption in the last 2 years probably supersedes the amount of technological adoption the previous 10 years prior to the pandemic, which Unfortunately, it was necessary, you know, due to the pandemic. And at the same time, when I sit in my seat or you sit in your seat, I'm excited because I see what a different world the restaurant, you know, restaurant business can look like now and in the future if people really take the time, the energy, and the money to invest in these tools that can make their lives better. Because ultimately, for me, it's all about helping these restaurateurs have a better life, being able to live a better life, not just because they made, you know, so much more money and that they can get a new BMW or new Mercedes or new truck or whatever. It's not about that as much as it is figuring out how do they run their business rather than having their business run them. And yes, way too often that takes a level of investment in automation and technology and in things that your team represents and my team represents. But nothing brings more joy to my ears than when I hear things like that. This is, you know what, you guys helped me get to my daughter's recital because, you know what, you guys made it so that I can check my restaurant sales online and I wouldn't have to be there on a Friday night and yeah, I can go to that recital. Like, that to me brings joy to me. And I know that just in talking to you offline, that's the kind of stuff that we like to do every day. And we sit in the middle of it, so we understand the value of it when people adopt it. But it's so great to see. And the fear that you had when we talked about you being on the show is really that people are going to get away from that, get lazy, and get back to what they had before. And I guess I would challenge our audience to say, don't go there. Don't go there. You guys have gone this way for a reason. If it's working, figure out how to continue to make it work rather than just going back to, our dining room's full, get off of me. I don't want third-party delivery. I don't want online ordering. I don't want any of this, you know, checks to pay, check, you know, QR orders, none of that stuff. Get rid of all of that crap. Bring me back to the way it was in, you know, in 2019, because that's really what we're saying.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The QR code, geez, the unsung hero of the pandemic. I mean, just.
Yeah. We thought it was dead and gone, you know, 10 years ago. And obviously, I mean, I was just out at a restaurant last night and they had QR codes on the tables, you know, for both picking up the menu and done well. You can even order and pay from the QR code if you want to.
Yeah. I've got a story. So it's believe it or not, I was on my way to one of my first RSPA events and I was stationed. I was in Minnesota for a long time. So I think that's why I use the word station, but I was in Minnesota at the airport and there was a tablet at the dining area, I guess, in this restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I asked somebody, I was like, I want to order something. And they're like, use the tablet. So I was like, really? I was like, that's what that's for. I was like, oh yeah. And so just the beauty and the joy of getting a beer, getting fries, and then I need another beer. I hit a button, it shows up. I was just like, this is amazing. So the QR code for me has kind of been a fantasy ask of our customers. I really want our customers to do that because as being a customer of theirs, it's like, I want you to have that because it's so amazing. I tell restaurateurs all the time about, you know, the hostage situation that happens at lunch or dinner. You know, you've got plans, you've got a timetable, and, you know, you've ordered, you want your check. Where's your server? You don't know. It's hard to find. And then eventually you get them there and then you give them your card. They disappear. So there's all these things that go into it, but, you know, like, and from our perspective, we've had pay at the table for years. And I would say like single digit numbers of people that have adopted that, even in the pandemic. And to me, it's like, please give it to me, please. Like as your vendor and also as your customer, please do this because I know your customers will love it. It just makes sense. You can turn those tables a whole lot quicker. Please, I beg you.
Yeah, no, it's funny that you talk about the hostage situation. That was the same. I mean, I've got a family of six, and longtime listeners know that I've got a larger family. And we had that exact same situation where we wanted to get home. It was a school night. We wanted to get the kids home and in bed, and we could not find our server anywhere. We're like, where did he go, and how can I pay? And this restaurant did have QR codes just to look up the menu, but didn't necessarily have the ability for me to pay. They didn't have the ability for me to do anything. Which back to what you were talking about is really the enablement of that guest experience, which is really kind of all of what we've been talking about today. Thomas, I'm going to ask you one last question that I like to ask a lot of our guests. What's one prediction that you think is going to catch people by surprise, or is going to be one of those things that that restaurateurs are going to adopt that maybe they don't see coming today, that they should be looking around the corner for? And then I'll give you my prediction or one of the two or three that I think is coming to the industry.
Geez, I wish I had a really good answer for this. So I sit on the technology committee for RSPA. And so they're always asking us about our predictions. And honestly, I mean, more often than not, I'm like, here's what I'm seeing. You know, I'm not seeing something major coming down the technology pipeline, except for adoption. It seems like, you know, the biggest tech is, or the biggest technological prediction that I can see is people making use of existing technologies. Because if it's technology for technology's sake, I had this conversation about Betamax versus VHS. You know, Betamax was clearly the superior format, but VHS won, and Betamax was still better for years and years. So it kind of goes to the point of like, if it's there and it's great, it's not any good unless you use it. So to me, it's like, my prediction is like, people will start using technology more, and it's kind of wishful thinking. I think I'm optimistic about it, but that's really kind of where I feel we're going. And maybe that's in the form of some kind of QR code or NFC or some kind of unified type payment system or whatever. There's just so much stuff out there. But yeah, I think it's the human element, you know, that humans will want to take advantage of technology more.
Love that.
Maybe that's a cop out. I don't know, but that's my opinion.
No, that's good though. I mean, that's good, because I think to your point, you know, pre-pandemic, you're getting, you know, single digits adoption of some of the technology that exists. And so the idea that people maybe are getting to a place where they're going to start to drive more and more of their decisions. The one that I like to throw out that I think is underutilized in the restaurant vertical significantly is the power of the data to make better business decisions, whether that be through AI, whether that be through machine learning. We're working on at CBS, we're working on a machine learning algorithm to figure out how to optimize your kitchen. You know, where certain items in the kitchen take certain amounts of time, and depending upon how big the order is, it does a different thing versus what items are on the order does a different thing. And so there's a whole series of algorithms that the machine learning system has built, really to help people optimize their kitchen, back to what we were talking about, because way too often an unoptimized kitchen can kill a service, and an optimized kitchen could do double the volume out of the same exact space with the same exact people. And I think the idea of taking the data that already exists and enhancing it in a way to help humans make better decisions that they're unable to make themselves, but can make through a computer, is something that we're going to see. I don't want to say take over, but I do think it's going to be something that is really going to help enhance what's going on within the industry as we go forward.
I take back my previous comment. Yes, I agree.
I also think one of my other ones, and I'll throw this one at you, Thomas. I think, and you can bring this back to the SDS committee, I do believe that there's going to be an AI camera technology that's going to sit in a kitchen and tell you what the orders are supposed. It's gonna pull in KDS data and or printer data to know that this taco, I just happen to have tacos for lunch today, that this taco is not supposed to have avocados on it, and that the guy on the station where he's assembling that taco put it on avocado. You know, put an avocado. I was supposed to have it on a flour tortilla, and I had it on a corn tortilla. That there's going to be an AI that is going to sit and watch what's going on in the kitchen to make sure that the kitchen staff is preparing the food the way that we would want them to, and the way that it was rung up to the point of sale, so that the guest gets what they want. Because I think all too often, especially in this takeout scenario, the food, when it used to get put up on a tray and put out to the guests, you could look at it and say, there's avocado on that taco, and send it back. Once you're doing takeout, it's now wrapped, and you don't know that there's avocado on it. And that's the biggest complaint that every one of our restaurateurs that's gone to third-party delivery and or takeout has struggled with. And so we've got to come up with a way to have this check and balance, but I don't think it's another human being sitting over your shoulder to make sure you put no avocados or you put it on a flour tortilla versus a corn tortilla. I think it's going to end up being an AI that's looking at that. And those are two of my predictions that I think are coming in the next 10 years. And we're gonna, when they come, we're going to be like, why didn't we think about this sooner?
Yeah, you know, as a person who's fascinated with technology, and the older I get, the more I'm into mechanical engineering. I've seen, you know, plenty of these shows where it's assembly lines, you know, for cars, really for into the food processing, where they have an AI that will take, you know, milliseconds to determine if something's correct in that line. So I'm picking up where what you're putting down. You know, some kind of AI restaurant manager who knows that this plate that it just went past the sensor knows what that should look like, and it says, okay, yeah, that's wrong, and maybe it kicks it back and alerts something. So this AI kitchen manager or kitchen
it's the food quality manager. It's an electronic food quality manager. There's one of our customers that's a really, really high volume that has an entire position that their job is food quality management, and they sit and just look at every plate and make sure that it's plated properly, make sure it's prepared the way that it shows in the KDS or in the expo window. But I think that will turn to electronics to do that at some point in the future. And so there's two predictions that you can put, you know, whenever we're recording this, it'll probably get out in a couple of months, but sometime in 2022, I predicted that these two things are going to come and hit us, and we're gonna be like, why didn't we think about these things sooner?
Awesome. I am for this. This, as a matter of fact, this really intrigues me. You know, how
I throw that little nugget out to you, you're going to go figure out how to do it and figure out how to make Skrilla's AI a distinct advantage in the industry.
I wish, but I have kids, and sometimes those two ambition is tamed by kids. I think someday, as a matter of fact, I'm impressed that you have six kids and you do what you do. That's amazing. You are really like Superman.
I tease my friends and family. You know, you need to get something done, find a busy person to do it, and I get a privilege of leading my family and leading the business that I get to hang out with. And so, Thomas, I really appreciate you coming on. I know it was an interesting, you know, round robin conversation. We probably could sit and talk for another 2 hours about all of the things that that are going on within the industry and where we think things are going. For those listeners that might want to get a hold of you, of Skrilla, to know a little bit more about you guys, how would they get in touch with you? How would they engage with you on the socials or otherwise?
Sure. So you can find us more commonly at www.skrillas.com, and I'll spell that. That's SKURLAS.com. And my email address is thomas@skrillas.com, and you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, all over the place. So if you can spell our name right, you can find us.
Awesome. And I'll throw your guys' stuff into the show notes. Thomas, I appreciate you taking the time. And to our listeners, guys, we know that you have thousands of choices of podcasts to listen to every single day. So I appreciate you guys spending just a little bit of time with us each and every time we post one of these episodes. While you guys are out online, browsing around, you know, checking out things, I would love for you guys to go subscribe both to the podcast and to our newsletter. Once a month, we send you guys a listing of all of the blog posts and the podcasts that have gotten sent out. Once a month email, not going to spam you, not going to sell your data, really just looking to make sure that we connect with you guys. If you guys have got guests that you guys would like to have us on, topics you'd like to see us cover, you want me to go find this AI company that's going out and doing this, or this machine learning company that's going out and do this, let me know. You can hit me up at restauranttechnologyguys.com. There's a couple of ways to get a hold of me. Both my email and our Twitter handle, our Facebook handle are all there. LinkedIn is also there. Thomas, again, thank you very much for making the time today. And to our listeners, make it a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.